Welcome to the It's Not Brain Surgery podcast, the AANS practice and business management podcast. Another episode today on ambulatory surgery centers. We really thank Dr. Richard Wones, MD, JD, MBA, for being with us. Richard, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Paul.
Dr. Wones has degrees from Harvard, Yale, the University of Washington is where he did his neurosurgery training 30 years ago, and he started out in biz school, and as a result of a business plan writing exercise, NeoSpine was founded. It was a concept for National Network of Outpatient Spine Centers. He received a $20 million venture capital funding to start that, and he's been involved in that ever since it was founded, and is really a leader, probably the leader in neurosurgery for advocating and founding and managing spine centers across the country. He also has really multiple and varied interests. And I want to talk to you a little bit, just kicking off this episode, Richard, about your experience in high altitude medicine. And he's the former vice president of the International Society of Mountain Medicine. He's been a physician and climber on Kilimanjaro, Mount Everest, K2, and performed the first and probably the only, I don't know, you could tell us about this, emergency appendectomy on an expedition to K2. How the heck did that happen?
Well, a lot of fun stories that I could start relating, but then no time to talk about outpatient spine surgery.
Oh,
but
sure. Yeah.
Real briefly, I was a doc for a K2 expedition, and I was advised to bring everything for any major medical emergency, including I brought a Burhol set and a surgical set, orthopedic stuff, because we were so remote. And if something happened, I was it. So I had to take care of over 100 porters, 16 expedition members. So I brought, you name it. And sure enough, one of the porters had right lower quadrant pain, which quickly progressed to peritonitis, septic shock. He had perforated. And basically, I had to operate on him. Otherwise, he would have died. So I set up basically an operating theater in a tent alongside a glacial river, and then got some help from a neighboring expedition. Japanese doctor had a bunch of translators for all the different languages involved. And then daybreak, we operated on the patient and drained the pus out of his abdomen, clipped off the end of the appendix, left a drain in, gave him a lot of antibiotics and fluids, and saved his life.
Wow. Goodness gracious, that is heroic. We should maybe get you back and talk about this on a separate episode, because I'm going to ask you one question while I have you here. So obviously we all know Edmund Hillary, the first to successfully summit and come down Everest, but many speculate that George Mallory may have been the first to summit, but he died, and they found his body here a few years ago. Any evidence if he died of a head injury?
That's another great subject, Paul. Our expedition to Everest actually took the same route up Everest through Tibet, northeast buttress, up to the first and second step when we did Everest in 84. And we were looking for Mallory's body. As you mentioned, it was subsequently found in a low snow year. And there's a question of how he died. And it doesn't look like he died of a head injury. Looked like he died of a fall. And he was clawing the mountain and was found face down with his hands, and all his clothing was pretty much intact.
Wow.
So he died of the fall. The question is, what really got him? It didn't look like a head injury from what I heard, but it's a fabulous story. And the book Ghosts on Everest is the book that gives that whole story of finding the body.
Wow. I'm going to have to get that. Well, let's get back to ambulatory surgery centers. You know, one of the things that residents ask, my residents do, and we have the ability, or our residents do participate in an outpatient surgery setting. What should they know about ASCs and about how practice is different at an ASC if they haven't had any experience as a resident?
Right. The first thing I would say is an old adage, walk before you run. And so for residents who are just coming out, they shouldn't start their practice just in the surgery center. They should start the practice with the usual mentorship found in a hospital facility, get comfortable. And then as they get speedier and feel more confident and do more cases, they can slowly go to an outpatient center and do straightforward, simple cases that they're real comfortable doing with or without mentorship, and get the flow of what it's like to be removed from an academic or any large community hospital where there's a lot of people around to a center where you're it as far as being the surgeon with your assistant, scrub tech, nurse, and maybe that's it. So you need to walk before you run, feel comfortable, and then you won't ever look back. You want to do it in a way where as a resident, you're not going in over your head for whatever reason. You're doing it in a proscribed fashion, doing it in a safe way for your patient safety and for your own mental security, that you're not in an environment where if you did feel like you're over your head, you don't have help. So my advice is ambulatory surgery center is the way to go, but at the right time as you begin your practice.
Yeah, walk, don't run. That's a very important thing to remember, because sort of the next question is the practice is quite different. The daily sort of routine as to what you do at an ASC versus an academic institution. Talk about that a little bit and then how you might be able to mix the two. For instance, I've got a colleague who 4 days a week is at a major tertiary center, but then one day a week he's at an ASC.
Yeah. And I think that's a normal balance, because if you take spine surgery, it's pretty rare that you can find a spine surgeon that can do all of his cases on an ambulatory basis. By definition, there's some spine surgery, either because of comorbidities or the extent of the work that you have to do, requires a hospital setting. And that's fine. I'm about 60% to 70% outpatient and still 30 to 40% inpatient, because of doing some complex work or high comorbidity. And there's no reason to try to push that. It is what it is. Your practice will define itself. So it's normal to do some work in the hospital, I say, for the majority of spine surgeons, but you can do at least 50% in an ambulatory setting, picking and choosing the cases appropriately, not taking a case that should be done in a hospital to the outpatient center just to do another case in the surgery center. You have to be judicious and properly choose. Patient selection is critical.
So talk to us about, we went over in the last episode, and I would encourage any of the listeners who have not heard it to go back and see our episode from last week and listen to that, which had really some of the basics. But talk to us about when deciding what cases to do, how you encourage, as it might be, an ambulatory center to set out on this. So I'll just give you a little background why I'm asking this. So we have both sort of a short stay hospital and an ambulatory surgery center. And the ambulatory surgery center has been active. Actually, there are two of them for years doing what are clearly outpatient orthopedic and plastic surgery procedures. The short stay place really hasn't done a lot of neurosurgery until recently when we've begun doing spine surgeries there. But the ASC management is still kind of reticent to allow spine surgery to be done there, even though we're saying, look, there are ASCs all across the country that are doing spine centers and spine surgery. And I know when the faculty members that I have went to the credentialing of the ASC, one of the first questions they ask is, what do you want to be doing here? And then they look up, are we going to get appropriate reimbursement for doing something like that in an ASC setting? And then, of course, they don't want slow surgeons. And there's this whole vetting process that a lot of ASCs have. So talk to us about that process.
Yeah, that's very, very complex, multifactorial issues. And what you want, if you look at it from the 30,000 foot level, is winners. You want winner surgeons. You want winner patients. You want winner medical staff. This is not an environment for, you mentioned slow surgeons. Well, right. Slow is okay to a point, but not where they're going to take 4 hours for a one level ACDF. You want a surgeon who knows what he's doing or she knows what she's doing. It takes an hour or maybe less. You don't want a long case. The longer the anesthetic, the less likely they are going to wake up comfortable without nausea, vomiting, right, urinary retention, and be able to go home in a timely fashion. So one of my formulas right from the beginning was do surgeries that can be done in a short period of time, do them really well, with no errors, have an anesthesiologist who knows how to put people to sleep and wake them up without any issues of the kind that I just mentioned, post-anesthetic issues, have staff that are really expert and know everything that you're doing cold, so that you're not trying to teach a new tech every other case what to do. You have the same people working with you day in and day out, and they can work with you. You don't even have to say anything. They know exactly what steps for each procedure you're doing. And then the other thing is just do a certain number of procedures. Don't go off on the bell-shaped curve to the fifth percentile and throw an oddball case in every once in a while. Stick to the center of that bell-shaped curve. Do the routine ACDFs, the routine cervical arthroplasties, the routine lumbar cases, and stick to that. Don't try, you know, I don't do any thoracic in the outpatient center. Don't do anything that's going to take longer than a couple hours, and have anesthesia that you have worked with knowingly and willingly, really excited about doing outpatient anesthesia. You can't take somebody who's used to doing inpatient anesthesia where the patient leaves the OR with the tubes and they have a lot of narcotics on board and they take hours to wake up. Our anesthesia regimen is really critical to our success at being efficient outpatient spine surgeons. These patients have very little narcotic. They have propofol, maybe a little ketamine, SIVO at the right rate, and they're put to sleep and they're woken up really efficiently.
That is very key. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, walk, don't run. Start with the simple procedures. If you're talking to a young resident, you know, recently graduated who gets involved in an ASC, to just do, you know, the simple things that you're good at that will instill confidence and show great patient care and efficiency. And then only later start adding some of the other things that you have found are okay to do in an outpatient setting.
Absolutely. And that's the way I started, even having been in practice 10 years when I first started doing outpatient spine surgery. I did the real simple cases that, as I said, choose winners. Everything, all the factors should be designed to win. And so I went back and just did the real simple cases outpatient, made sure that the numbers were good as far as outcomes, patient satisfaction, no takebacks, no trips to emergency rooms for whatever reason. Patients were doing fine as far as post-anesthesia issues. And then I grew it from there.
Perfect. Are there any best practices? Could you give us maybe three best practices that improve healthcare outcomes for patients in the setting of an ASC?
Yeah, best practices include doing everything possible to prevent complications. And if you have a complication in a hospital, like a CSF leak, or other issues that can be construed as a surgical misadventure, it's able to be handled a lot better than if you have those things that happen in an outpatient facility of a similar nature. So you need to be so cautious because you do not want to have a failed case that you go through the case and you have to transfer the patient to the hospital via an emergency room with an ambulance. You have to visualize that. So your best practice is prevent errors right from the beginning. Everything in your mindset should be, this case is going to go 100% perfectly. And if you do get the inadvertent CSF leak, have a plan so that it's not a fire drill. And it's going to happen in the best of hands. It can be handled outpatient. And it frightens a lot of surgeons when that happens for the first time. But if you think about it and plan it, have a dural repair kit, talk it through with your staff so that if we do a redo case, a revision case with a lot of epidural fibrosis, as I said, even in the best of hands, you can end up with a CSF leak. Have it all planned out in advance, like a drill. Well, what do? Okay, we get the tissue glue, we get your suture material, your Castro Viejo needle holder, and we're going to take care of it. It's not going to be an issue. almost never will that patient have a problem if you plan it out and it's handled real expeditiously. They won't even have a headache if you know in advance what to do if you do get a CSF leak. And then absolute hematoma prevention. But as I go back a little bit in my comments earlier in this conversation, pick the right patient. Yeah. And don't pick the wrong patient. So best practices start in the office. It's not just in surgery. So you need to think, is this patient okay for outpatient? Is the socioeconomic status of the patient? Do they have home support?
Right.
Do they have the right mental attitude? Do they have the right body habitus? What's their history with anesthesia in the past? You have to go through all that, not just is it the right case?
Sure.
Or is it the right patient? So those are the best practices, is go for a win. Don't choose the wrong patient. Make sure that you have a plan for if there is a problem such as a CSF leak, and prevent hematomas with meticulous hemostatic techniques, and use the half-strength hydrogen peroxide in your anterior necks, in lumbar, absolute hemostasis. And then one little kind of pearl for the bigger lumbar cases, pain control is critical. So anterior cervical is not as much of an issue for pain control. It's more of an issue for hematoma prevention. But for lumbar, if you're going bigger than a minimally invasive one-level disc and you're going multi-level LAM, whether it's with tubes or open or mini open, use Exparel or something similar to that to get really good pain relief with local, with the lysosomal bupivacaine.
Bupivacaine, yeah.
Instead of relying just on oral opioids post-op. And that, again, best practice, prevent problems is the key thing. Prevent hematomas, prevent out of control pain, prevent post-anesthesia problems, pick the right patient, et cetera, et cetera.
So along those lines, we hear a lot about ERAS, extended recovery after anesthesia, in general surgical procedures. Do you use that and or some form of that in your ASCs?
Yeah, some form of it. We backed off. We don't use any gabapentin anymore. We found that was an issue, particularly in older patients. We use the Tylenol, no problem with that. We use an NSAID, no problem with that. Even in a fusion case, one dose of an NSAID is acceptable. So modified ERAS, and it does help. You know, knock on wood, we just don't have issues after surgery because we try to prevent those issues with ERAS and with a good anesthesia regimen.
You know, along the lines of what you were saying about trying to assess whether patients have help at home, their socioeconomic status, I remember one of my chairs that trained me, Shelley Hsu from the University of Minnesota, years ago, he would always ask us, you know, what does the patient do for a living? You know, when he came to the VA hospital and was the attending there when I was there. And, you know, I don't know, Dr. Hsu, he's a vet. I mean, but knowing the socioeconomic status, what the person does for a living, you can generally get a good idea when you're talking to them if they're going to be taking really good care of themselves after surgery, taking care of the wound, what that is going to look like in the days to weeks after your procedure. And you see somebody that may not pay that much attention to it and be a little cavalier, maybe that's not the person to do at the ASC.
Absolutely. And that's exactly along the lines of what I was saying, is it starts in the office. Pick the right patient. And you need to know these factors when you decide site of service, because you just don't want to get the wrong patient into the surgery center. It'll be just a disaster.
Do you have some form of QA or M&M or something like that when you do have an event to keep it from happening again?
Oh, yes. We have monthly governing board meetings, and we go over any case where there's a problem. Good news is that there's rarely a real issue, but anytime there is an issue, and sometimes it's something you don't expect, like even related to neuromonitoring, and the bite block wasn't put in properly, and the patient had a motor evoked potential, and they bit their tongue. That kind of thing. We go over that, and we're on that. So that's a never event going forward after one of those. So sure. I'm just mentioning it as an example that we look at any adverse event as something we never want to see again. So we do everything to teach the group, okay, this is what happened, this is how we prevent it.
Kind of one last question. We were talking off mic about how I see how efficient my partners are at an ASC, and I do mostly cranial surgery, and I'm thinking, I would love to get to do a craniotomy as an outpatient, but again, you don't want to pick the patients that are going to have to stay overnight or have a complication. What are your thoughts on outpatient craniotomy?
It's the future. If I were going to business school this decade, I would bring it up in my microeconomics class as a project, get a business plan written, raise some venture capital, and do it.
That's the wave of the future. I mean, so, you know, with our residents that are finishing and young neurosurgeons, I guess the take-home points of this, there are a number of them, especially walk, don't run, pick the right case, have some form of mentoring. Don't just right out of the chute start practicing the vast majority of your practice at an ASC, right?
That's absolutely correct. I could add one thing if we have another minute.
Sure, please.
Okay with you.
Of course.
Enabling technologies. I wanted to make a comment on that. A lot of residents, and rightly so, are using enabling technologies training and expect it in their practice when they get out and join a practice. And sometimes they won't do a case without a robot or without a neuronavigation system. You know what I mean? They're using technology, but they need it. So the good news is that some of these enabling technologies are finding their way to outpatient surgery centers, and it will be more normal for robots and neuronavigation type devices to be in outpatient centers. But residents who are used to using that and need it need to make sure they know where it's available when they go into practice. And if they want it and it's only available in the hospital, then they need to lobby for it in an outpatient setting if they want to eventually move to doing spine surgery with neuronav or with robotics.
Excellent. Yeah. So that's the wave of the future, and people need to, residents need to look out for that before they enter that realm.
Absolutely.
So you've got degrees from Harvard, Yale, and your residency at UW. In a match between the Bulldogs, the Crimson, and the Huskies, who would you root for?
Great questions, Paul. And all I can tell you is that the last time I went to a Harvard-Yale football game, and it was in New Haven, I was rooting for Harvard. And I was getting a lot of nasty stares because there were mostly Bulldogs surrounding me.
Yeah.
You have to be careful. Like, either you don't root for anybody if you're, you know, in a situation where you're surrounded by the enemy. Well, although it's not really the enemy.
No. You got to be prudent, right? That's what we've been talking about. Dr. Richard Wones, expert in ambulatory surgical centers, thank you so much for talking with us on these last two episodes now of It's Not Brain Surgery.
It's been my pleasure, Paul. Thank you very much.
And Richard, we'll definitely get you back to talk about your other interests. I think that would be a fabulous episode to talk about high altitude medicine and the fact that you're a visiting professor in Kathmandu, right?
Yeah, Paul. And if you got 30 seconds, I'll mention that, you know, I set up this foundation called the Nepal Spine Foundation. And we're going to Nepal twice a year and doing a lot of teaching of the residents and junior faculty regarding new types of new technology in spine. And that's a really good subject to talk about because, you know, we started with real basic spine surgery, but really good surgeons over there and enabling them to do more and more and more by bringing the technology that we have to them, showing them how to use the implants and devices and the equipment and the instruments. And, you know, they're such good surgeons. They've just taken off and run with it. So now they're doing routine, minimally invasive fusions and discs, and they can do any type of hardware. They're fabulous to work with. And we've had just a great time doing that.
Yeah, we'd love to talk about that sometime. Am I correct in remembering that a former AANS president, I think by the name of Merwin Bagan, got things started in Nepal many years ago?
Absolutely. And I credit him in my presentation on how I got started in Nepal. Yeah. Merwin got me placed there and told me all about this program that he developed in the 90s at the Tribhuvan University Teaching Hospital. and how he taught the first resident who became the professor for that department, who's now very good friends of mine, and how Merwin got me started on this whole program through Foundation for International Education in Neurosurgery, going there, working with the people, bringing other neurosurgeons with me. It's been going on for 10 years now.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Richard. Really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Paul. Great to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. We've got some exciting episodes coming up, including a What Sessions You Can't Miss at the AANS with John Ratliff, the meeting coming up in Los Angeles. And then Brian Barnes will be talking to us about moving to outpatient care in ASC. So thanks for listening to this episode of the It's Not Brain Surgery podcast. We'll talk to you next time.